So how's that sound? Yvonne, we both began our lives in New Zealand in Gisborne. I came to Gisborne from Scotland just after the war, and my first experience of ethnic relations was that the local Maori kids beat the crap out of me because I talked like a Pom, straight out of Ebar Gum, you know, Coronation Street. But I got over it. Last year, Jim Flynn, the Emeritus Professor of Politics at the University of Otago, published No Place to Hide, Climate Change, a Short Introduction to New Zealanders. Professor Flynn is better known internationally for his discovery of the so-called Flynn effect, the historical gains in IQ or intelligence quotient globally, except for US presidents, I think I would add. No Place to Hide is available from what calls for $29.95. To save you $29.95, I have done a six-page summary, which is on the St. Luke's website, which is www.slw.org.nz. So you can find that on the website. That's six pages, and it's free. I prefer the term climate disruption to climate change because, as sceptics invariably point out, the Earth climate changes over time. Climate change is a euphemism for climate disruption used by big energy, which is following exactly the same tactics that big tobacco used to cast doubt for decades on the established link between smoking and lung cancer. In my previous employment as a physicist, futurist, and disaster manager, I've worked for Victoria University as a lecturer, graduating PhD in 1968, for the DSIR Physics and Engineering Laboratory as a physicist when public good science still existed in New Zealand, for the Commission for the Future as its Science and Technology Investigating Officer, and for the Ministry of Civil Defence as its Assistant Director of Research and Planning. My 55 years scientific career has included publications on three threats that I perceived to future human civilization: ozone depletion, nuclear war, and climate disruption, which is linked to the first two. In 1974, I happened across a paper by Roland and Molina in the journal Nature, warning that Freon propellants used in fly sprays was depleting the Earth's ozone layer, and this was important because the ozone layer protects surface life from the otherwise lethal effects of solar ultraviolet radiation. We would be living in caves now if it weren't for ozone, and this sort of stuff, destroying it, didn't seem a very good idea at the time. My initial response, as always, was a letter to the paper, the precursor of today's Dominion Post. A strong public response to my letter resulted in me being interviewed on New Zealand's then single television channel by the lovely Sharon Crosby. Several days later, a lawyer acting on behalf of a major multinational corporation threatened by telephone that if I didn't publicly retract what I'd said during my interview, the corporation would sue me for $3 million. This is 1974, about 50 million in today's dollars. Almost inconceivable. Since I was citing peer-reviewed science and being a stubborn bugger, I chose not to retract. By agreement with Television New Zealand, named as the second defendant, the charming Sharon Crosby explained on a subsequent broadcast that Freon, a generic term for hydrofluorocarbons, is listed in Webster's American Dictionary with a lowercase f, not a capitalised brand name. To my relief, the legal threat lapsed on that technicality. The 1987 Montreal Protocol, restricting Freon releases into the atmosphere, and Roland and Molina's subsequent Nobel Prize for Chemistry in 1995, shows that their 1974 paper, which stirred me into action, was good science. What I learnt from my own experience is that major multinational corporations and peer-reviewed science can prove a toxic mix. And I also learnt the importance of correct punctuation. My job description for the Commission for the Future in 1980 required me to identify future contingencies that New Zealand might face in subsequent decades. To achieve this, I set up four ad hoc study groups of experts to investigate natural, societal, global financial, and global nuclear disasters. Contingencies 1, Natural Disaster, published in September 81, I think was probably New Zealand's first official government publication on climate disruption. On balance, it found in favour of increasing global temperature driven by increasing human-induced carbon emissions rather than a return to another glaciation. Future Contingencies 4, Nuclear Disaster, published posthumously in March 1982, was a disaster for the Commission itself. This peer-reviewed report by five contributing authors analysed the consequences of the global nuclear war for New Zealand. Prime Minister Robert Muldoon interpreted the report as questioning the wisdom of New Zealand's participation in the then ANZUS alliance. His immediate response was to disestablish the Commission. The immediate consequence for me was unemployment. What I learnt from my own experience was that politics and peer-reviewed science can also prove a toxic mix. I must confess to sailing my brother-in-law's yacht to protest against visits to Auckland harbour by US nuclear-powered and or armed ships. However, New Zealand's subsequent nuclear-free policy shows that Muldoon's interpretation was not entirely unreasonable, although it was neither a consideration nor a recommendation of the study group. In 1985, I updated the Commission's 1982 nuclear report through my own private publication, Nuclear Disaster, A New Way of Thinking Down Under, and you get the picture from the front cover. In this update, I drew on subsequent research on climate disruption by a global nuclear war. It included sub-zero temperatures at the equator, darkness at noon, and very aptly termed a nuclear winter effect. Carl Sagan was closely associated with the science. I'll now summarise Jim Flynn's conclusion, drawing on my own experiences as a physicist, futurist and disaster manager. Firstly and most importantly, climate disruption, in my view, is a threat to the continuation of human civilization. Whether it be caused by human-induced carbon emissions from burning coal and so on, or by global nuclear war. Secondly, can I have the picture now? Secondly, climate disruption is scientific fact. In a post-Trumpian world of alternative facts, scientific fact may require explanation. Scientific facts are identified by the application of the so-called scientific method, developed by scientists during the 17th and 18th century scientific Enlightenment period. The process is initiated by a scientist proposing a disprovable scientific conjecture. If that conjecture is supported by observations, leads to theories that explain it, and to successful predictions also supported by further observations, it eventually can be considered to be scientific fact. The conjecture that increased human-induced carbon emissions from burning fossil fuels would cause climate disruption was first proposed not in the 1960s, but by the Swedish chemist Arrhenius in 1896, 121 years ago. Unequivocal proof of Arrhenius' conjecture has been provided by decades of peer-reviewed science consolidating the assessment report of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change published in 2013. This report establishes climate disruption by humans as scientific fact. Concerns about climate disruption is not, as some would have us believe, tilting at windmills. Thanks. What's the underlying cause of all this? Earth's current distribution of tectonic plates allows polar ice caps to form. Polar ice caps presently cover the land masses of Antarctica and Greenland. Whether they persist or not will largely determine Earth's future climate, and I believe the fate of human civilization. New Scientist for the 22nd of April 2000 reports that during the last 2.5 million years, the Earth has essentially flipped between ice ages and warmer periods. Taking a shorter time frame, over most of the last 7,000 years, global temperatures have been decreasing, at a rate of 100.01 degrees Celsius per century, a cooling trend over the last 7,000 years. However, over the last 45 years, they have been increasing at a rate equivalent to 1.7 degrees per century, driven entirely by human activities. So, you know, humans in the last 45 years are 100 times stronger in influencing the climate than the natural processes. Okay. In fact, scientists are now beginning to recognise three phases of evolution of the Earth's biosphere, that's the section of the Earth that contains life. A microbial era of single-cell life that began 3.5 billion years ago, about 1.2 billion years after the Earth condensed. A Cambrian explosion of complex multicellular life that began 650 million years ago, and you are all examples of complex multicellular life. And an Anthropocene era beginning about 50 years ago when humans began to wreak havoc in the biosphere through climate disruption, mega extinctions, deforestation, etc., etc. Human-induced carbon emissions are now predicted to increase atmospheric carbon levels by 2050 to their highest level in 50 million years. IPCC's 2013 estimate for a sea level rise of 1 metre by the end of the century has been recently increased to 3.5 metres by a lot of recent papers. Scientists warn of a tipping point around 2050 beyond which global warming essentially causes irreversible melting of glaciers and runaway global warming, despite all human efforts to reduce carbon emissions. Flynn argues it is sheer fantasy to imagine that all nations will cut their carbon emissions in time to avoid this tipping point. Flynn concludes that even the most optimistic carbon emission cuts cannot save humanity from this tipping point unless also supported by climate engineering that stabilises global temperature during the slow but necessary transition to zero carbon energy generation, which is feasible but takes a long while. I'll conclude by quickly outlining for your consideration some possible responses to the threat of human-induced climate disruption. Firstly, read Jim Flynn's short introduction or my six-page summary of it, which is available on the web, and become better informed. Secondly, I should add that Jim Flynn considers my summary of his book to be a good one. I have that by personal contact. Secondly, makes admissions to politicians prior to the event in September that holds them accountable for their completely inadequate responses to date. Over the past decade, I have made 21 evidence-based hard copy submissions on climate change to all MPs and all mayors and chairs of regional, local and district government. That's a circulation list of about 600, 21 of them. Despite these, my efforts, these 21 submissions amounting to 84,026 words have absolutely had bugger-all effect. Thirdly, support organisations taking direct action against those directly responsible for climate disruption. I am proud to be a 1% shareholder in Greenpeace's new ship, currently protesting against prospecting in New Zealand's territorial waters for new oil that can never be burnt, and have a no new oil sticker on my letterbox. It's not anything to do with deafening whales, which, you know, that's an issue as well. Why the hell are we looking for more oil when we already have more in our known reserves than we can burn? You know, it is simply madness. Thirdly, support organisations taking... done that. Fourthly, think of your grandchildren by supporting Generation Zero's promotion of the Zero Carbon Act. We'll put the link on the website to this. Read it for yourself. This organisation, Generation Zero, I'm deeply inspired by, represents a generation with the most to lose from a completely inadequate response to climate disruption by almost all New Zealand politicians to date. Thank you very much.